You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Today is October 10th, 2012. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 13,344, the NASDAQ at 3051, and the S&P closed at 1432. Last week, I was joined by Mike Apolity, CFP, to discuss retirement income planning strategies, and he helped answer the question, will we outlive our retirement income? I want to thank Mike for coming on the show. I appreciate his input and having him here. We hope you enjoyed the show as well. Tonight, we're going to talk about IRAs. This affects a lot of people. There are lots of different kinds of IRAs. We have traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, rollover IRAs, spousal IRAs, inherited IRAs. So any one of those may impact you at some point in your life if they haven't already. Maybe when you go to retire, you're going to want to know a little bit about IRAs. So we're going to talk about some of the nuances and understanding them a little bit better. We are live. Andrea will be in the studio in just a minute with us tonight, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so we can hear each other without the delay and we could talk without confusion. You can call in, give your question to Andrea. If you're not comfortable talking on air, she'll bring it in to me, and then I'll do the best I can to answer it. But if you're comfortable talking on air, it makes it a lot more fun for me, a lot more fun for the listeners, and then we can have a little bit back and forth about your questions. The number to call in this evening is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Before we get started, I do want to mention something I thought of when I was driving over here, which kind of went by last week without my realizing it. We had an anniversary, I would say, Your Financial Choices. I believe it was September 29th, 2009, I think, when I came to this station. So we've been here 3 years. I can't even believe it. If someone, Jeff's saying happy anniversary. If I thought about it and someone asked me, oh, how long have you been doing the show? I would probably say, you know, a year or something like that. But we've been here 3 years, and I was on another station for 2 years before that. So we've been doing this almost 5 years now in total, trying to think of different things to talk about each and every week that affect your financial choices. I love doing it. I hope you enjoy listening, and I hope it's helpful and beneficial. If you do have questions, you don't always have to call in about the topic that we're talking about. Sometimes it makes a little bit more sense, but if you have a question, you're listening tonight, and you have a question about something else, like, I don't know, estates or inheritance or income tax or something like that, don't be bashful. You can still call in with your question. I just happen to have a topic each week, try to set the stage, get people thinking, and tonight that topic is IRAs. So we're going to talk about different aspects of IRAs, what are the contributions, what are the conversions, what different kinds of IRAs do we have. So regular listeners know that we always try to set the table first, kind of get some basic concepts down, and then we kind of delve in a little bit deeper as we go. There's actually so much to talk about IRAs that I hope I don't get going off on different tangents and kind of lose my way. But if you do have questions or get confused, the phone number, 610-758-8810. So IRAs, when we talk about IRAs, an IRA is an individual retirement account. If I had had more time, I would have looked up to see when they started. I do remember, I think, back in 1985 when I was first working at a CPA firm, I do believe that's about when they started. And I think the amount that you could put into an IRA account back then was about $2,000. It hasn't really gone up a whole heck of a lot since then, but we'll talk about those amounts and all the options that you have regarding them. So let's talk about a traditional IRA. We're going to call that the original IRA. It was an incentive to get people to put money away for their future when they retire. And the incentive was, if you put money into this account, you could get a tax deduction on your tax return. So that's how these first started, the traditional original IRAs, an incentive to get people to put money away in their retirement accounts. Why would the IRS want to have that incentive? Well, because some people may have had retirement plans at work, while other people may have had jobs or were self-employed that may not have had the same access to different kinds of retirement accounts or to pensions and that type of thing. I believe this also was during a period of time when we saw more and more companies go to 401ks versus pensions, trying to put the onus of saving for retirement more on the employee than on the employer. So, and traditional IRA basically is an IRA that is not a Roth, and it's not a simple IRA. When you have an IRA, back in the day, I told you, you put money in and you got a deduction for it, and that was your incentive to put money away for retirement. But over time, as laws have changed, rules have changed, and people had retirement accounts at work, the rules kind of had to start changing a little bit. And as the rules evolved, what ended up happening is there could be an IRA that someone could put money into and get a deduction for on their tax return. But there are other people who put money into an IRA and do not get a deduction for it. Or maybe it's limited. The reason being is that some people who already had retirement accounts through their employer, who were maybe getting a tax benefit through payroll deduction, through putting money into a 401k, the IRS wasn't going to give them an additional benefit. Remember, we said this all started as an incentive more for people who weren't saving for retirement, and it was an incentive to get them to save for retirement. So for those folks who already had a plan at work through their employer, then they were trying to get this other benefit of the traditional IRA. They were sheltering so much of their income. Laws must have changed, rules must have changed, and it was kind of like a, whoa, let's not give all the incentives across the board. Let's make sure that it's directed to the people that we intended it to be for. So we don't want people sheltering all of their income. They still want some people paying taxes. So the traditional IRA is a means to put money away for those people who are within certain thresholds and limits. Or if you don't have a retirement plan at work at all, you for sure can put money in a deductible IRA. For those people who are working and have a retirement plan at work, your contributions, while you might still be able to make them, the deductibility of them will be limited depending on your other income. Okay, so big picture, traditional IRA. If we're working, we have earnings. I'm going to go over those amounts in a little bit. We can put money's into an IRA, whether or not it's deductible depends on our other income. So some other guidelines for IRAs. You must have earnings, and you cannot be over age 70 and a half by the end of the year. So if you turn age 70 and a half in 2012, you cannot put money into an IRA. There's different rules if you're employed and you're in an employer plan. Different rules. We're talking about IRAs right now. So if you're still working, God bless you, at age 70 and a half, in 2012, you would not be able to make further contributions to your IRA. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because at age 70 and a half is when your required minimum distributions begin out of an IRA. So you need to have earnings. You're not over age 70 and a half. And I'll add that you need to be alive. Now, that sounds kind of funny, but I've had situations where we had a decedent who was working, had income, and usually made contributions to an IRA every year. He died, and the surviving spouse said, well, can we make our contribution to the IRA for my husband? No, you cannot. So that's one of the other rules. We're going to continue talking about some of the nuances of IRAs and all the different kinds when we come back from our break. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, it's Rebecca Walls with a pledge buyback update. Just $1,000 to go. That's it. And once we get there, we'll get out the Sharpie and cross out all those pledge breaks scheduled to begin on Friday. Won't you help us? Donate now at WDIY.org. It's fast, easy, and safe. Plus, you'll be supporting your listening by becoming a member or renewing your membership. And as always, thanks for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is Your Financial Choices and your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions this evening, you can give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about individual retirement accounts, IRAs. We're starting talking about the traditional IRA, and then we'll move into some of the other ones like Roth IRAs, rollover IRAs, inherited IRAs, and all the nuances that go along with that. I had just mentioned that you need to have earnings and not be over age 70 and a half. You need to be alive. You can have a traditional IRA, I had said, even if you're covered by an employer plan, but some or all of your contributions may not be deductible. I'll go over the limits in a minute, just giving you big picture right now. If not all of your contributions are deductible, then you will have like a cost basis in your IRA. I'll talk about that later. Each person has their own IRA. You and your spouse cannot contribute to the same account. I had mentioned that you must have earnings. What are earnings? Let's talk about that for a minute. Earnings are wages, self-employment income. So if you have a Schedule C, you're self-employed, or other type of self-employment income. You may have self-employment income through a partnership. You could have earnings that are alimony. Alimony is considered earnings for the IRA contribution calculation. Alimony. You also could have non-taxable combat pay. So it'll look like you don't have all of your pay is taxable. But if you have non-taxable combat pay, you can factor in an amount to put into your IRA based on that. If you do have self-employment income and you also work and you have wages, if your self-employment is actually at a loss, you need to offset your wages against that when you're doing the calculation to determine how much you can put into your IRA. There is a spousal IRA whereby you can make a contribution to an IRA on behalf of your spouse, but it's based on your wages. So husband and wife, if the wife is working and the husband is a stay-at-home dad, and we qualify to put money into an IRA, we could put money into an IRA based on my wages for my husband. Okay? Subject to the other limitations I'm going to talk about in a little bit. All right. So you want to factor in any contributions that I myself would make. So, for example, if I'm working and let's say I don't have an employer plan at all, I'm the one working and I want to put $5,000 into my IRA. I can do that if I'm making $5,000. Now, let's say I'm earning $10,000. Now I could put $5,000 in for myself and $5,000 in for my spouse. Whether or not they're working, as long as they don't have a retirement plan, they can do it based on my wages if they're not working. If I am working, then there's certain limitations, all right? So it's going to be the smaller of your earnings or the annual amount that you're allowed to contribute. which is basically $5,000 plus a $1,000 catch up if you're age 50 or older. And I'll go over that again in a little bit, but I'll just throw that number out there right now. All right, so those are some of the basics of traditional IRAs. I want to talk about some of the limits, and this gets a little crazy and it's a little bit detailed, but let me kind of give you some framework here. So if you're covered by a retirement, well, first let me say, if you're not covered by a plan at work. So if you're not covered by a plan at work and you're single, then it doesn't matter what your income is. As long as your earnings are $5,000, you could put $5,000 into an IRA and take the full deduction. If you're 50 or older, you could put another $1,000 in, and now you have a $6,000 deduction. That's if you're not covered by a retirement plan at work. The same thing would apply if you're married filing joint. So you could put money in, and if neither of the spouses are covered by a plan, both of you can put in $5,000 each as long as the earnings are there. It's the smaller of the earnings or the $5,000. So you could do $5,000 for husband, $5,000 for wife. If you're 50 or over, you could do $6,000 for husband. And if the spouse is 50 or over, you could do $6,000 for them. So that's now a $12,000 deduction. But if you're married filing joint and one of the spouses is covered by a plan, then you have to be very, very careful because now limitations kick in. So if one of if only one of you are covered by a plan and the other one isn't, the limitations are much higher than if you have both spouses covered by a plan, okay? So this is now if you're not covered by a retirement plan, but maybe one spouse is. Then you have to look at something called modified adjusted gross income. So you can't automatically put money into an IRA for your spouse if they're not working. If you are covered by a plan, if your income is over $183,000, you could put the money in, but it's not deductible. So the deductibility is what comes into question if you're covered by another plan. So if you're, and your income is over $183,000 if you're married filing joint. Okay, there is a phase out between $173,000 and $183,000. So if you know your modified adjusted gross income is under $173,000, then you can both put in. If it's between that range, then there's a phase out. If your modified adjusted gross income is over $183,000, then you can't put the money in for the spouse. Okay. And if you're covered by a plan, you can't put money in and make it deductible for yourself. Again, I've got to be careful as I'm talking about this because it's going to be a little bit technical here. You can always put money into an IRA. It's just whether or not it's deductible is what you need to calculate based on all of the income. All right. Married filing separate has different limitations, and that's much, much lower. It's like less than $10,000. You can do it if it's $10,000 or more. Then I think it's not allowed, and that's a little bit more complicated. I don't want to get into that right now. So those are the limitations if you're not working or if one of the spouses isn't working as far as doing a spousal IRA. But if you're both covered by a retirement plan, or you're covered by a retirement plan, if you're single and your modified adjusted gross income is $58,000 or less, then you can do a deductible IRA. That's that $5,000 or $6,000 if you're age 50 or older. If your income is between $58,000 and $68,000, there's a phase out. So some of it might be deductible and some of it might not be. And if your income is over $68,000 and you're single and you're covered by a retirement plan at work, then you're not allowed the deduction for your IRA. So if you did it and you don't want to reverse it, then you've made an after-tax contribution to an IRA, and you have to track that on a special form on your tax return. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. If you're married filing joint and you're covered by a retirement plan, we're looking at $92,000 or less. No problem. Still deductible. Phase out between $92,000 and $112,000, and not allowed as a deductible as a deduction if you're over $112,000. Okay, that's the hardest these numbers are going to get tonight. I'm not going over those hard numbers again. I just wanted to throw those out for anybody who's really, really paying attention to the show closely. Those are the ranges. And now I'm going to go back to kind of some broad brush information that's really going to be important for you as you're moving forward. And we're talking about 2013 and how different things might impact your choices that you're making this year. Folks, if you have questions about IRAs, retirement accounts, whatever, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hey, Jeff, I'm laughing because you couldn't say the word frost. It's like, what? He probably had to look at it. What? Frost? What? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, folks, it's coming. So that's when we get all snug in our blankets in our houses and sit and listen to the radio, listen to your financial choices. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about IRAs tonight. We've gone over traditional IRAs and how the incentive was to save for your retirement. Some people may get a deduction for doing that, and some people won't get a deduction for doing that. And that was the original IRA we were talking about. You know, over time, as that evolved, what happened is it gets very complicated trying to track the amounts that you got to deduct versus the amounts you didn't get to deduct in IRAs. But that's what you had to do. If you ended up putting money in an IRA that for whatever reason you weren't allowed to deduct, means you just changed your contribution from what you were hoping to be a pre-tax contribution to an after-tax contribution. So traditional IRAs, you put money in, you get a deduction, and when you take all that money out eventually, it's all income taxable. But now what happens? All of a sudden, the rules changed. You put money into the IRA hoping that it's all going to be, you know, you're going to get a deduction for it, and then when you take it out, it's all going to be taxable. But what happened is they wouldn't allow your deduction for whatever reason, which changed the character of that contribution then. Now it was no longer a pre-tax contribution. It became an after-tax contribution, meaning I didn't get a deduction for it. So if now I have an IRA that I put $5,000 in that I'm not getting a deduction for, now I have after-tax money in my IRA. So let's pretend that's all I have in my traditional IRA. And my $5,000 grows to $5,500. If the next year I take a distribution out of it because now I'm old and I want to take my money out, that $5,000 is cost basis. I don't pay tax on that $5,000 when I take it out. I'm only going to pay tax on the $500. The problem is, when you put money into that IRA, the custodian doesn't know if it's after tax or before tax money. It's just a traditional IRA when they go to look at it. The IRS won't know if it's pre-tax or after tax. They're not going to help you figure that out unless you fill out a form called a Form 8606. You have to fill out a special form with your tax return if you are putting after-tax monies into a traditional IRA. All right? So before tax, that means your contributions to your IRA were deductible, and when the money's come out, all of it's going to be taxable. After tax, the contributions you put in your IRA were not deductible. You've accrued basis or a cost basis in your IRA, and when you take the distributions on that kind of IRA, the after-tax contributions aren't going to be taxable, but the earnings are. So what happens if you don't take out the whole thing? Let's pretend I'm only going to take $2,000 out of that IRA I just described. What am I taking out? Am I taking out my after-tax amounts or am I taking out my earnings? Well, the IRS tells us when we have after-tax contributions in our traditional IRAs, we have to do an allocation. The only way we know how to allocate it is by looking at our Form 8606. The 8606 will tell us how to allocate and what we'll do is we'll say, I'm trying to think, I just had a brain moment. Is it a 5329? Anyway, what we have is the form 8606 is going to track our basis. So if I take out $2,000, then it's going to say $2,000 over 5,500 times, you know, the 5,000 over the 5,500 times $2,000. There is an allocation. It gets even a little bit more confusing when you take your 401k and roll it over to an IRA. If you have a separate IRA with these kinds of after-tax contributions in them, when the IRS looks at your IRA accounts, no matter how many accounts you have, the IRA looks at your IRAs as one IRA. So all of that money gets commingled. Not your Roth. I'm not talking about Roth IRAs. I'm just talking about IRAs now and rollover IRAs. Those all get commingled. So it could get a little confusing. You really need to make sure that if you have any after-tax monies in your IRAs, you're tracking it on Form 8606. If you have after-tax money in a 401k, you really need to think about taking that out before you roll it over to a 401k. So anybody out there with retirement plans at work, 401ks, maybe people who were working pre-1986. I see a lot of people with after-tax contributions that were contributing pre-1986. I see people still doing after-tax contributions because they think they like the idea of deferral. They like the idea of just saving as much as they can. When you go to roll over a 401k, at that time, you're going to have an opportunity to take out your after-tax monies. If you roll your after-tax monies in a 401k into an IRA, you're back to this allocation business and this Form 8606, and it gets very, very confusing. So make sure that you are tracking things on the Form 8606. If you do not report after-tax amounts on your Form 8606, all of the contributions to your traditional IRA, even if they were after-tax contributions, will be treated like deductible contributions when withdrawn. All the distributions will be taxed unless you can show satisfactory evidence that the non-deductible amounts were made. And there is a $50 penalty for failure to file a Form 8606 if required. So that is going to be your friend. You want to make sure that you fill that out if you're doing after-tax amounts and carry it forward in your work papers. Now, here's the funny thing. So for a while we had those IRAs, we had deductible ones, and then we had the after-tax ones. People were saying, hey, I still want to put money into an IRA. I can still get that deferred growth, deferred tax consequences, even on the earnings. So I'm still going to do after-tax amounts. Well, what came along then? And I don't know what year it was. All of a sudden, we had a new kind of IRA, and that was called the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA, there is no deduction today, so it almost looks like that after-tax contributions to the IRA. The beauty of the Roth is there's no deduction now, and then the earnings, when they eventually come out, are also not taxable as long as we take it out in a qualified distribution. So in my mind, why would anyone do an after-tax contribution to an IRA if you could do a Roth? I'll tell you why when we come back from the break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show, folks. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. We're talking about IRAs tonight, some of the different strategies you can use. I had just mentioned that traditional IRAs were the original IRAs. They started way back when, Usually they started with deductible amounts that you could make to your IRA. You got a deduction on your tax return. Over time, that evolved into only giving that deduction to some people. If your income was too high or you had retirement plans, your deductibility of your IRAs was phased out or limited or not allowed. So then they were allowing after-tax contributions. People needed to track their after-tax contributions to IRAs on a Form 8606. And then that evolved into a new kind of IRA called the Roth IRA, which is also after-tax monies going into an IRA. The difference is when you put money into a Roth, the earnings, as long as you take it out in a qualified distribution, meaning you've held it long enough, the earnings won't be taxable either. So I said, why would anyone put money in an after-tax regular IRA when you could put money into a Roth? Well, it's because the Roth has limits, folks. There's adjusted gross income limits for 2012. Your Roth contributions, you're not going to be allowed to do a Roth if you're married filing joint and your adjusted gross income is over $183,000 or if you're single and it's over $125,000. There's a phase out between 173 and 183 for married filing joint and 110 to 125 if you're single. So if I'm married filing joint and my adjusted gross income is $170,000, my husband and I could both do money into a Roth if we have earnings. It's after tax, so I'm not getting a deduction, but when I eventually take that money out in a qualified distribution, none of it's income taxable. If it's over that amount, I'm not allowed to do it. Then I could put money into the traditional IRA, do after-tax contributions into the traditional IRA, track it on the Form 8606, and I'll tell you another little trick with that in just a minute. We have Ed on line one. Ed, can you hear me? Ed?
Hello.
Hi, Ed. How are you? Can you hear me?
Is this Laurie?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for taking my call, Laurie.
Sure. How can I help
this
you?
This should just be quick.
Okay.
I wasn't aware. You mentioned that if you're over 70 and a half, even though you're still working, you may not purchase IRAs.
You cannot contribute, right. You can't contribute to an IRA once you're age 70 and a half.
Okay. How does that relate to rollover of an employer account to an IRA if you're over 70 and a half?
What happens, Ed, if you're still working and you have an employer plan at work, you don't have to start required minimum distributions on your employer plan, so you may want to leave it there if you're continuing to work. But at age 70 and a half, sometimes employers allow us to take an in-service distribution and allow us to roll over money out of our employer plan into a self-directed IRA, or you may have retired and have decided to roll over the money into an IRA. So once, in your situation, are you still working for an employer?
Planning to retire within the next few months and well over 70 and a half.
Okay.
I do have an employer account.
Okay. If you have an employer IRA or 401k and you've been working, there is no required minimum distribution for you if you're an employee and you're not an owner and all that kinds of things.
Okay.
So you wouldn't have had to take a required minimum distribution. But once you roll that money into from the 401k or you retire, so even if you retire, you would have the required minimum distribution once you retire and or once you roll it over to the IRA. You will have the required minimum distribution in the year you turn age 70 and a half or you retire. And then it's based on the December 31st balance of the prior year. And
okay.
Let me just further say, the 70 and a half, Ed, what happens is you have to take your required minimum distribution by April 1st of the year following the year you turn age 70 and a half. So let's pretend in 2012 you're still working and you're going to retire and you turn age 70 and a half. So you're having wages. One thing you might want to look at is if in 2013 you're not going to be working, you might be one of those people who want to wait to take your required minimum distribution until next year, because you'd have to take it April 1st of the year following the year you turn age 70 and a half. But then what would happen in 2013, you would be taking your 2012 distribution and your 2013 distribution.
Okay, I think I understand that, but my question had to do with a person who is retiring and is well past, or perhaps 80 years old.
Okay, then you shouldn't have been putting money into IRAs, but you could have been putting money into your 401k.
Correct.
Yep.
And when that is rolled over...
You can't put money into an IRA after age 70 and a half. You cannot. But you can roll it over. You just can't contribute based on your earnings. You can roll it over.
Correct. Okay.
You just can't. Yeah, you just can't contribute additional monies.
And then you immediately start taking a distribution.
Correct. Correct. And you might want to plan when you take that first distribution, if you have an option to do it by April 1st of the year following. You know, if you're going to have lower income in 2013, it might be something to think about.
Right. Good. Okay. Thank you, Laurie.
All right, Ed. Thank you. I hope I didn't confuse you.
That's very helpful.
Okay. Have a good night. Thanks for calling. Okay. Jeff, did we take our 6:30 break?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. If you have questions, give me a call, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So one of the other little tricks I said, if we talked about doing after-tax contributions into a traditional IRA, why that's not as attractive as a Roth IRA, but then I had mentioned that some people can't do a Roth IRA because their income is too high. If your income's too high to do the Roth and you still want that deferral vehicle, I said you could put the after-tax amounts into a traditional IRA. Now, the next thing you could do is think about, after you put the after-tax non-deductible amounts into the regular IRA, you could immediately convert that IRA to a Roth IRA. If that's your only account, it's fairly simple to do. It's much more complicated if you have other IRA accounts and then you're talking about commingling of dollars. Because if you have, let's say you have a $100,000 IRA, and now you have $5,000 after-tax IRA. Remember I told you the IRS looks at that as one account, so then you'd have that allocation. So you can't just convert the after-tax monies. The IRS allocates it based on the whole bundle. So when I mention about putting money after-tax dollars into an IRA and then converting it to a Roth, it works very well if you have no other IRAs. So this is really a strategy to be considered by people who may be working, who have 401ks, who have never put money into an IRA and their income's too high to put into a Roth. You might want to look at the concept of using an after-tax contribution to an IRA and then possibly converting it to a Roth. So Roth IRAs, no deductions now, but there are limits, and the earnings and gains are not taxable with a qualified distribution. The other beautiful thing about Roth IRAs, as I said, they're after-tax. You put $5,000 in. Let's say that grows over time. I only put the $5,000 in, and let's say it grows to be $12,000 in, you know, 10 years. And in 10 years, my child's going to college and I need some money and I'm tapped out and I can't find any other money. I could actually take that original $5,000 contribution back out of my Roth without any penalties or tax. So your original contributions to a Roth can come back out. There's a tiering system that the IRS has, and the first contributions to come out of a Roth are deemed to be your original contributions. So that is one way to save, hopefully not having to tap it at all, but if you needed it, it could serve as your emergency fund. Again, in order to contribute to a Roth or a traditional IRA, you have to have earnings, and it's the smaller of those earnings or $5,000 if you're under age 50, and $6,000 if you're over age 50. With talking to Ed, we talked about a rollover. So let's talk about rollovers for a minute. if you do have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We only have about 20 minutes left, so if you have questions, call now, get them in. A rollover IRA, when we talk about that, a rollover IRA is monies that were at one time in a qualified account. And when I say a qualified account, I mean like a 401k. So if you're at work and you have a 401k, there are certain protections for that 401k from creditors. It depends on what state you live in, what those protections are. Protections for IRAs are a little bit different. So when you take a 401k and you roll it over to an IRA, it will be called an IRA rollover. And that's the clue that that was your qualified money and some of those same protections will continue to apply. One of the things that happened several years ago, I think in the Pension Protection Act, is the IRS gave us the ability to kind of commingle all of these monies. Now, at some point, I think your custodian or trustee of your IRA is keeping track of these, but you can have a traditional IRA that you can roll, you know, convert into a Roth IRA. You can have a traditional IRA that you move to another traditional IRA. You can have a traditional IRA that you move into a qualified plan. You can move your qualified plan money into a Roth IRA. You can, there's tax consequences, but you can move it into a traditional IRA. You can move it into another qualified plan. So they tried to make our retirement accounts a little bit more transportable. You just have to be really careful when you're doing this. You'll hear people talk about trustee to trustee transfers. That's probably the easiest way to avoid trouble. And avoid, you know, tax situations that you did not intend, so unintended consequences. When we talk about trustee-to-trustee transfers, we're talking about when if we have our 401k at our employer, they don't cut the check to me personally. They might do it directly to another custodian, or they transfer it like literally through, you know, brokerage and wires, and you never take possession of a check at all. That's a trustee to trustee transfer. Some of these different ways to move monies will generate a tax document, a 1099-G, which is for a rollover, and it'll have a 1099-R with a code G, which indicates that it was a rollover. If you don't do it in a trustee-to-trustee transfer where it's, you know, where they can obviously tell that it was a transfer or a rollover, you may have a 1099-R that shows that you have a taxable distribution. If you, for example, take a check out of your 401k or a traditional IRA and you're going to move it to another IRA, but if you take a check in a distribution and it has your name on it, you have 60 days to put it into another IRA account or another retirement account. You have 60 days to do that. I want to caution you here, though, folks, because we haven't talked about inherited IRAs yet. An inherited IRA is one that you inherit from someone. You don't ever want to take a check on an inherited IRA unless you've talked to someone first and have done lots of tax planning. I had a client, well, he came to me after the fact, who went to a bank. He had an inherited IRA from his mother. It was $140,000. The bank gave him a check. He went to another bank and opened up an IRA. He thought he was opening up an inherited IRA. He opened up an IRA. They put it in his name. You cannot do that. Inherited IRAs do not work that way. There is no 60-day rule, and you cannot make an inherited IRA your own. So you've got to be very, very careful. When I'm talking about trustee-to-trustee transfers, that's for you, but you can also do a trustee-to-trustee transfer when someone has died. They move the IRA to an inherited IRA, special wording. It is the deceased person's name for benefit of the beneficiary. So if Lori Siebert dies, it's going to be Lori Siebert for benefit of children or husband or something like that. All right. I'll kind of try to go over that again before we close out the show. We're time for another break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Plenty of time for questions. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back with your financial choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, CPA and CFP. We're talking about IRAs. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live on the air with me, or you can give your question to Andrea, and she will bring it in, and I'll do the best I can to answer it. We have been talking about IRAs, the different kinds, traditional IRA, before tax contributions, after tax contributions, the Form 8606. We've talked about Roth IRAs. We've talked about rollover IRAs. We've now ended the last segment talking about inherited IRAs. I just want to mention the only person who can make an inherited IRA their own is a surviving spouse. So if I inherit an IRA from my husband, I can put it in my own name, and then it's my IRA. And if I work, I can make more contributions to it. I can name my own beneficiaries, all of that. There are times that even as a spouse, I may want to keep it as an inherited IRA. The reason is, if I'm age, 50, and I inherit an IRA, if I make it my own, then the same rules apply to me that apply to everybody else, and I can't take money out of that IRA without penalties if I'm under age 59 and a half. So if I'm a spouse inheriting an IRA and I'm under age 59 and a half, then I may want to keep it as an inherited IRA in case I need to take money out of it. There won't be any penalty. There still would be income tax, but there won't be any penalty on early distribution if it's an inherited IRA, because the exception to the early withdrawal penalty on IRAs, the exception is death. That's one of the exceptions. Is death. So if I inherit an IRA and I'm under age 59 and a half and I need to take money out of my inherited IRA, I'll pay tax on it. But there, if it's a regular IRA, if it's a Roth IRA, I won't pay tax either way. But if it's a regular IRA, I will not have penalties for early withdrawal if it's inherited. It's an exception to the penalty. Which is one of the reasons why I get a little crazy when people inherit IRAs and they take out the whole thing. You've just locked yourself in to taxing the entire amount when you may not need the entire amount. If it's a small IRA, it might make sense. But if someone inherits like a $150,000 IRA, why would you want that tax consequence to hit all in 1 year? There may be reasons you need to do tax planning. But at least if you take it as an inherited IRA, you can plan a little bit better. On an inherited IRA, there is a required minimum distribution. So you heard me talking earlier with Ed about the required minimum distribution being age 70 and a half, but you have till April 1st of the year following. An inherited IRA, there is a required minimum distribution, but it's not based on age. It's based on the year following the year of death. So an inherited IRA, distributions are required to start coming out the year after the year of death. And it's based on your life expectancy, typically. Okay, there's lots of complications with life expectancy. But let's say it was all well and good. You're the named beneficiary. You did everything timely. Then over my life expectancy, that could be stretched out quite a bit. That's the minimum amount. You can always take out more if you need to. So if I inherit a $150,000 IRA and I need $10,000 this year, but my required minimum distribution is only one, well, I can take one, or I can take 10, or I could take the whole amount. But at least it allows you to kind of do some planning. So be careful with that. We have a call on line one. We have Sue.
Hi, Sue. Can you hear me?
Hello, yes.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. How can I help you?
I have a couple questions for you. One,
okay.
I have a son who is 21,
uh-huh.
and, you know, when the kids were born, we put money into a 529,
good.
You know, the PA-529.
Okay.
And with him, he's not much of a student, so he went to, like, a program in Johnstown. It was, you know, run through the, I guess, the Commonwealth, and learned like a skill.
Okay.
And he is now employed.
Great.
Hopefully staying with it. But I still have like $35,000 in his
529.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's based on, I did it on what's it called? You know,
like a public university.
Prepaid tuition.
Okay.
You know, that type of thing.
Okay.
Because I figured that's the thing that goes up the most.
Right.
You don't know with stocks, but right. You know, tuition is always going to go up.
Right.
So, yeah, I have like, let me see with the latest statement. As of 6/30/12, I have like 31,000.
So, Sue, you're wondering, now that your son's done, you still have this money sitting in the 529, what's going to happen to it?
Yeah, I mean...
And you couldn't use it for the school he was in. It wasn't like an accredited school program that qualified for the use of the 529 money.
It was only $5,000 that we had to pay for like a year. It was a special program. And I did try to... You know, see if I could, but from what I, when I talk to, you know, the 529, you know, people, or, you know, the PA Treasury and the school, I guess they needed a certain number, and I don't think they had that number.
Okay. Well, Sue, did you, normally on that statement, it'll say, here's the value of the tuition, but here's what it is if you take it out. And sometimes it's like a discounted value. So they might say it's worth $31,000, but if you were to take the money out for something other than tuition, it would be some lower value.
Okay. I see. It says tuition inflation value as of, you know, this was of... Just I pulled out this statement. I don't know if this is the latest, but...
Well, Sue, let me just run this down because I have another caller on the line. Do you want to try to get the money out?
I didn't know what I should do with it. Should I just leave it? Because now I know you can use it for other children that...
If you have other children, or you could check to see about naming grandchildren. I don't know if your son could eventually, you know, have other children. You need to look at the program guidelines. Call the number and ask them some of these questions. Ask them, say, can I transfer it to another child? Or, because I'm not as familiar with the state plans as I am like custodial plans. So to call the state and say, what happens if I take the money out? What kind of penalty do I have if I don't use the money for education? If I decide I want to name another beneficiary, can I name another child if I have one? Or could I give it to my son and then he could use it for other college down the line, or he could use it for his child. Sometimes there's time limits on these. So give them a call and ask them those questions. But you want to ask, can you take it out? What's the penalty if you don't use it for education? And how much would that be? And otherwise, how do you change the beneficiary on it? Okay.
Okay. And I had other questions, but
I'm running out of time, so I have one other person online. But call back next Wednesday. I'd be happy to answer your calls then, too, questions then. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have Wilma online, too. Hi, Wilma. Can you hear me? Wilma, hi. I'm on.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Fine. My question is, I work for the federal government.
Uh-huh.
I am on the old... Hi.
Yeah, you're on the old. You got to turn your radio down so you can hear me without the delay. There's a bit of a delay.
Okay,
so just,
that's fine. At any rate, I work for the old system, and I do not get Social Security from my retirement. I am presently working.
Okay.
But I am going to be 66 on March 1st.
Okay.
And I am now paying in, doing some work, and I'm paying in to have enough quarters to get any Social Security. So I will have my quarters by the end of this year.
Okay.
But I also won't be paying my Social Security from the work I'm doing until my tax return is done, which will probably be after my birthday, which is March 1st.
Okay.
Now, a couple of questions. I was advised to take the Social Security while I'm working because then it's not going to be cut down. Supposedly, after I take my retirement, most of that Social Security payment will be gone. The second thing is that can you take your husband's before they're dead? I didn't have, you know, somebody mentioned that to me, and I never heard of that before.
Well, you have several things going on, Wilma, and it is a little bit complicated when you're a government worker because there's like an offset. Because you haven't paid Social Security, you're going to get a government pension. There's like, so you wouldn't normally be entitled to Social Security. Now you're saying you're working, and so you're building up some quarters, and you're hoping to then get a little bit of a benefit. I don't know if you have internet access, but on the Social Security website, you can probably simulate some of these things that are going to happen. The other thing, if your husband is older, if he's collecting Social Security, is your husband collecting Social Security already?
Yes.
And what age did he start collecting?
66.
So he waited till he was full retirement age.
Right.
Okay. One of the things that you can do, and you are how old? You're going to be 66.
I'm going to be 66 on March 1st.
Okay. One of the things that happens, if you could wait till March 1st, you could always start collecting on your own record, which might not be much, and mm-hmm. you need to check to see how that coordinates with your government pension. But you could start collecting on your own record at age 66, at full retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
Your husband's benefit, though, once you're full retirement age, you can choose whose record you're going to collect on. And Social Security will work with you to make sure how you should coordinate this. But once your husband's collecting, you could collect your spousal benefit, which is, you know, based on his record. Now, the only thing is, with the government pension, I'm not sure how that coordinates with that. I'm not sure if you actually can collect on your husband's record if you yourself had the government pension. I'd have to check on that.
Okay.
It's worthwhile checking out. I think you have some options, and I think you have to get all the numbers. And I would not elect to do anything until you see all the numbers. Don't make any decisions until you see all of the moving parts of that.
Okay,
all right?
So I'm going to have to meet with Social Security.
I would probably do that, but still don't sign up for anything. Get the numbers, because sometimes, Social Security, you know, they might not understand how the government benefit coordinates with all of that as well, and that you're working and that your work record isn't going to be updated until you file your tax return.
Okay.
So you got to get all the numbers down. I think you're very smart to be asking about this, though, and very smart to investigate it. But it is complicated because you have the government pension. That complicates it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Wilma. Sorry, we didn't have enough time to kind of get into all the details of that. That's a very complicated situation, and it's going to require a little work on her part. So it's a good reminder to everyone to know that when it is time for you to collect Social Security, there are a number of different options you may have, and it's best not to lock into any election until you have considered all of your benefits and your options, depending on your spouse, how much they worked, who has the higher earnings, what age are you, full retirement age or not. If you're under full retirement age, you don't have as many options. So lots of stuff going on there. Next week, folks, we are going to be talking about charitable giving because we're in our pledge drive. The other thing I probably will try to do at the beginning of the show, though, is wind up the topics that I didn't get to finish this evening, talking about conversions, talking about Roth 401ks, the timing of your contributions. I want to let you know how long you have to make contributions to your traditional IRAs or your Roth IRAs. What if you over-contribute? What do you do? What are your options? Excise taxes for over-contributions, folks, are pretty hefty. 50%. They could be. There's a 6% excise tax on excess contributions. Sorry, it's a 50% tax if you don't take your RMD. So we want to talk about all those things, recharacterization. So we'll get into that next week at the top of the show, and then we'll talk about charitable giving. That's next week. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Andrea. Stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.